Teresa and I have always wanted to follow the mighty Columbia River to the coast, and we've had a great day driving through the magnificent Columbia Gorge and then past the beautiful city of Bridges, Portland, Oregon. We finally reached Astoria and the Pacific, and frankly, I'm starved.
We've been hearing rumors that Dungeness crab season has begun, and Hal is a man on a mission. But first I talk him into taking in the lay of the land. Right now we're on Coxcomb Hill, overlooking the town of Astoria. This is the site of the first permanent American settlement west of the Mississippi, a chapter of history commemorated by the Astoria Column. I expected to find an impressive marker here, but I've never seen anything like this pillar, a tall, slim candlestick tower that soars 12 stories above us. An incredible fresco spirals up its walls, telling the story of the area from native wilderness through the visit of Lewis and Clark through settlement and the coming of the railroad. But the real treat, we've been told, is to look out from the top. So we enter the tower and start climbing. The tower is 150 feet high. The spiral staircase has 164 steps. But who's counting? I don't know. Maybe I should have fed him first.
Oh, the Columbia River, the ocean, the town of Astoria. Oh my gosh.
If we weren't already panting from the climb, the view would take our breath. We look out on a glittering blue paradise, the mouth of the Columbia and the vast Pacific beyond, the complicated shoreline with its bays and inlets and coastal lakes, the graceful sweep of the Astoria Bridge linking Oregon and Washington, and behind us, the snow-capped peak of Mount Rainier and what's left of Mount St. Helens. Astoria itself is picturesque, built into a steep hillside overlooking the sea, and populated today by the descendants of Finns and Norwegians and Swedes who adapted their native fishing cultures to the American Northwest, bringing along, too, their culture and music. Some of the original sea captains' homes have been refurbished as bed and breakfast. Guests can take in the view from one of the old widow's walks, looking down on the harbor with its lines of fishing boats, one of the best maritime museums in the country, and a host of restaurants and seafood outlets offering the catch of the day.
Seafood? Now there's an idea.
Something smells good.
Oh, they're beautiful. Oh,
they really are.
Gosh. Oh, can't wait to cook them.
We find our way to the Sanctuary restaurant and meet Joanne Leach, who's about to cook the fall's first catch of Dungeness crab. We're now across the Columbia River in the town of Chinook, Washington. They call this eatery the Sanctuary because it's housed in the chapel of a refurbished turn-of-the-century church. It's a great place for tourists in the know because the locals love it here. Unfortunately, the restaurant's closed to the public tonight. Joanne is cooking for the Columbia River Crab Fisherman's annual dinner. But hospitality prevails, and she and her husband, Gino, invite us into the kitchen. Joanne is fixing one of her favorite recipes, a special crab puff appetizer.
This is red onion. I'll do some fresh garlic.
It's deliciously simple. First, Joanne prepares a mixture of spices and cream cheese while the fresh crab boils on the stove.
And I'm going to just leave the lid cocked so it won't boil over.
Food and its presentation have always been important to Joanne's family. Joanne's fisherman father, John Freeberg, immigrated here from Sweden in the 1920s and is a legend in the community. It's said that even in the worst storm at sea, he insisted that his coffee be served in a bone china cup and saucer. Now at age 96, he still prefers fried oysters to any other dish. Fresh seafood and good Swedish cooking had more than a little to do with Gino and Joanne's courtship.
First thing that impressed me and her family at Christmas time, they lay out these banquet tables, newspapers on the table, and they fill up that table with crab like that, fill the table up. And everybody's got little hammers and bang, away you go, and that looks pretty impressive, you know. I said, this is a good place to hang around.
Gino Leach did hang around, quitting his globe-trotting life as a merchant marine. He says he became a fisherman so he could understand what Joanne's family was talking about at the dinner table.
Meanwhile, preparations for tonight's dinner have shifted into high gear. Joanne oversees her scurrying staff.
Ray, would you please lift these over to the cold water?
It's like a ballet in here with people dancing around each other in a very genial way. When they have something heavy or hot, they say, "Coming through," sort of in a hushed tone. The smells are great. The sounds are great.
The crabs have cooked for 15 minutes. Now the meat is removed from the shell, and Joanne adds it to the cream sauce. Then she spoons the mixture into small puffy pastries. Other appetizers are being prepared for tonight, but Joanne knows that the crab fishermen will be most critical of this dish, made from their life's work.
Oh, this looks yummy.
Oh, that's really good.
Soon the guests, the crab fishermen and their wives, arrive at the sanctuary. After a brief meeting, they descend on the appetizer table like seagulls on a landfill. The cooks listen through a crack in the kitchen door to hear if their efforts have paid off.
Doesn't get any better than that.
The genial group sits down and digs into the main course, prime rib with all the fixings. After handling fish all week, they're hungry for beef. At the end of the meal, it's storytelling time. They all tilt back in their chairs and coax Gino to serve up his own special dessert, poems from the fishing life, verses he's written about people they all know, scenes they've all seen, and tales they've all heard before.
Well, this one's about Terry Salo and the Panther. I went back fishing a few years ago at Blair Minor, and we'd be on the back deck, and old Blair would go, "The Panther's on the prowl." So I wrote a poem about it. Well, the veteran dragger Panther was off the Willapaw.
The Bard of Mariners, Gino holds the crowd in rapt attention. It's amazing how a poem can take a story about the lives of everyday people and make it timeless.
Well, a lump came up, the sky turned gray, it began to blow. We all bucked into Westport.
These fishermen are well satisfied, and not just by the delicious meal. They're nourished, too, by the blend of community and tradition, in the stories that dignify the danger, hard work, and humor of their lives.
The veteran dragger Panther still prowls the sea today, this battle-scarred campaigner stirs hearts along the way. Terry Salo's our captain, the Jimmy Wines and Howes, Terry and the Pirates keep the Panther on the prowl.
This Thanksgiving, Teresa and I are thankful for the good fortune that brought us to this gathering. And for Joanne and Gino, who make everyone who comes through the door, neighbor and tourist alike, feel like an old friend. We're thankful for good food, not just for those crabs who gave their lives, but for the cooks and for the ruddy-faced fishermen who risked the high seas to bring this bounty ashore. And we're thankful, too, for the stories and the storytellers and for the way they bring us together.
You see these bumper stickers that say the guy with the most toys wins? To me, it's the guy with the most stories wins.
From the open road, I'm Hal Cannon with Teresa Jordan for The Savvy Traveler.
The Sanctuary Restaurant is close to great beachside rental cottages, moderately priced bed and breakfasts and hotels, old lighthouses, and sublime views. If you want to read Gino's poetry or Joanne Leach's recipe for crab puffs, you can find them on our website at SavvyTraveler.com. By the way, when you feast at the Sanctuary, feel free to ask Joanna to pick up her accordion after dinner.